You need to bring sweatbands.
I know.
I mean, because I don't want you to get sweaty as you're
This stretching. Is the most limber I get is before these podcasts.
I don't know if that stretchy. Says something or for
it
you.
Says all bad things about Philip's general fitness. Yes. Okay, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the 10th episode of Podcast for Good, the magical 10.
10. We've hit the double digits. Boom.
What anniversary is 10? Is it like paper or
sure.
wood?
Or I don't know. Let's go with it.
Rubber?
Rubber.
I don't know.
Is rubber an
rubber would feel like a number two, like a two-year anniversary. Not very significant.
Silicone?
Whatever it is, that's where we're at. 10th podcast for Podcasts for Good.
Boom.
And we are going to hit you with a treat of a podcast. Honestly, we're going to hook you up with an interview that we did with Sarah Lloyd and April Spaulding. They work for Safe Place. If you can't tell by now, this one is about domestic violence.
Yeah.
Because this is actually National Domestic Violence Month.
Yeah.
And so it's perfect to actually talk to Safe Place because there really is no other charity in the program that's more high profile that deals with domestic violence than Safe Place in our program.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So my name is Philip Kerrigan and this is...
Heather Lucas.
Yes. And so we are going to talk to you a little bit about stats associated with domestic violence in Washington State. Mm-hmm. And then we were going to get into the very, very in-depth interview with those guys. I thought it was really striking, just some of the questions we had. And, you know, you always try to, like, leave a little bit positive.
Sure.
There were a few times where I was like, oh, Don, this is not positive.
Well, it's a hard subject to be positive about. Yeah. Like, it's violence, and violence is never fun.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. So I promise everybody, it is a... It's a great interview.
Yeah.
They had so much good information.
Yeah.
So why don't we start by you talking about some of the statistics associated with domestic violence, specifically here in Washington State.
So this is, again, kind of a difficult statistical breakdown. Mm-hmm. Like, there isn't a ton of, hey, here are clear indicating factors, and here's the clear, like, this is Washington State's picture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Because domestic violence is one of those things where people... they feel shame. They don't want to admit that this has happened to them, mm-hmm. and it is underreported.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have like true numbers as far as statistics go.
Okay.
But information about domestic violence and how it works. So like, it's a pattern of behavior one person in a relationship uses to gain power and control over another. So like, a lot of people like want to say, "Oh yeah, well it's." Finances, it's anger, it's mm-hmm. Like drug abuse, like that's what causes domestic mm-hmm. violence. Like, that's not what causes mm-hmm. it. It's a person who does it, and it is a learned behavior.
Mm.
So something we talked about in the interview was like, who can be a victim or a survivor of domestic violence? It can be anybody. So you can be a strong-willed, successful individual, or you can be someone who's passive and mm-hmm. doesn't have any like career successes to name. So you like all over the gamut,
right?
And the victims, there's no like connecting factor.
Mm.
So it's just, you can be a victim, and you can be from any race, gender, any religion, anything. But there is a slight connection for people who are abusers.
Okay.
Like, it is something where abusers, they tend to justify their behaviors.
Yeah.
And they fail to take responsibility for the abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots of similar tactics that they use as an abuser to a victim mm-hmm. to maintain power and control over that person.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I thought, and we'll talk more about, we'll break down the interview with them after we're done. But one of the things that I always find very interesting is that whole idea of power and control, because I think that we are living in an age where more and more people are feeling powerless.
Yeah.
Not to get too sort of down the rabbit hole with regards to the way news is reported today, but...
Sure.
I mean, we're seeing it play out over the last couple of weeks between even natural things like hurricanes and mm-hmm. then human tragedies like Las Vegas.
Yeah.
We watch the news now, and we are awash in things that we are completely powerless over.
Yeah.
And so it's not hard to see people get to a point where they feel so powerless that the only thing they have power of is the other person in their relationship.
Yeah, especially if they can go behind closed doors, lock those doors, and mm-hmm. then they're spending, you know, 12 hours of their day
yeah.
in that home.
Yeah, and I've also, you know, I mean, on a, you know, like, personally, I have seen families that have had a history of abusive, like, mothers or fathers.
Sure.
And then to watch the siblings, the kids in that particular situation grow up.
Uh-huh.
And it was really, it's really stark. It's really striking. You know, a few might be able to escape that and
yeah.
really make this sort of like conscious decision. I'm not going to be that way. And that's it. And that's all. I'm not that
yeah.
guy.
Yeah.
But then a lot of times people fall in the same patterns that they saw.
Well, yeah.
You know, from their families.
Yeah. You think about it with anything, like how you grow up in your home,
mm-hmm.
What you are exposed to, that's what you know.
Yeah.
So probably by the time that somebody becomes like, I don't know, like 10, 13,
yep.
16, like that is the era in which, like, if you grow up in a home that is, you know, like you're not homeless,
yeah.
you know, you have some structure there, then whatever's going on in your house, you're gonna
mm-hmm.
take. So
mm-hmm.
like if your parents are Republican, you're gonna be Republican.
Yeah.
If your parents
right.
listen to Led Zeppelin, then you're gonna listen to Led Zeppelin,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
Like it doesn't matter what happens in your home,
yep.
like you're gonna do that
yeah.
until you get to that age where you're like, oh,
I don't wanna do these things.
I don't wanna
anymore.
Do that, and I'm gonna make my own decisions.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you get to be an adult,
yeah.
make those conscious
yeah,
efforts.
Exactly. But it does feel like I think there was even talked about like there's this learned behavior.
Yeah.
Like you still don't shake those sometimes either,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Even if you think you want to.
Yeah.
And you consciously
yeah.
shake it. There are still these idiosyncrasies and these sort of things that you like keep with yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they came from when you were younger.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And like too, when you're a kid, I always found it fascinating to go from my house to see a friend at their house.
Yeah.
And then just be like, wait a minute, you talked to your parents this way?
I know.
I've never eaten this.
Yeah,
I've never seen this. Like, this is a new thing for me. And it's just like, what? We eat these kinds of foods all the time.
Yeah.
Or we talk to our family like this all the time.
I know.
You know? And then you're just like, this is a strange, crazy world.
I know. There'd be, I'd go, like, I'd have friends come over to my house. And, you know, we were intimidated by my mother, right? I mean,
yeah.
When she told you time to do something, you did something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember my friend being like, my mom came into the room and she was like, you know, it's time for dinner. You guys need to come down. And my friend would be like, dude, like, why is she in your private space? I'm like, what? No, man. Like, that's not how this works.
Yeah, it's her house.
I go downstairs.
Yeah.
Because otherwise, I don't get anything later, right? Like,
yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's funny how that works. Like,
yeah.
yeah. So, you besides Safe Place.
Yeah.
There are other programs that help try and end or combat domestic violence or even soothe survivors. So
yeah.
what are a couple of those programs?
So one thing that I'm going to link to in the podcast
mm-hmm.
is a page that has links for all kinds of programs. Now,
awesome.
Every county, all 39 counties in our state has a program.
Cool.
So some programs cover multiple counties,
mm-hmm.
but every single one has at least a place that they can go,
yeah.
some place they can contact.
Yeah, yeah.
So, for example, New Hope, they cover Adams and Grant County.
Yeah.
Forks Abuse Program covers Clallam County.
Mm-hmm.
API, Chaya, and Solid Ground cover King.
Mm-hmm.
Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault Services of Whatcom County covers...
Whatcom!
Hey,
what a surprise!
What a surprise! Alternatives to Violence at the Palouse is Whitman County.
Mm-hmm.
And then Safe Place, they're
awesome.
In Thurston.
Awesome.
So yeah, no matter what's happening and where you live in Washington State,
you can go, you
can reach out to services.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So that's super cool because, like, I mean, people need help, and we're a charity program, so it's
yeah.
great to have all kinds of programs
Absolutely.
That help people.
Totally agree.
Yeah.
Totally agree. So hit me.
Yo.
With the question of the podcast.
All right. So we live in a crazy age where people make up words all the time.
Sweet. Yep.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Bigly.
Bigly. Bigly. I was trying to think of a word that, like, is a pretty new one, but, you know, like, you look on social media and people just kind of shorten words to become something else, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the simple hashtag is,
yeah.
like, a word
hashtag,
in and of itself.
Yeah.
Hashtag is a new thing.
I was in band
uh-huh.
in middle school, and, you know, it was a sharp. And yeah. now people are understanding, like, oh, why are there hashtags on these music sheets? Right. No.
It was a pound sign for a long time.
Yeah, now on the phone, it's a pound sign. Now it's a
hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that by itself, like, there's one.
Exactly. Hashtag. Hashtag feminism. Hashtag awesome. Okay. So.
Hashtag question the podcast.
Hashtag question the podcast. New words enter the lexicon regularly. Ghosting and gaslighting are among them.
Yes.
Now, these are two tactics that are older than what we give them credit for and what sure. we know. But have you ever been ghosted or gaslit?
So, full disclosure, I don't know.
Do you want a definition?
I would love that.
Okay.
Hit me with what ghosting and gaslighting is.
Okay. So, I have two definitions, right?
Okay.
Gaslighting. We'll start with that. No, let's start with ghosting.
Okay. We'll go ghosting.
All right. So ghosting is having someone that you believe cares about you, whether it's a friend or somebody that you're in a romantic relationship with. This person disappears from contact without any explanation at all.
Oh.
No phone calls, no texts, okay. no emails. Okay. They don't see you anymore. They're just okay. disappeared.
Got it.
Okay?
Okay.
Gaslighting is a tactic which a person can, in order to gain more power, makes a victim question their reality.
Got it. Okay, so I've never been gaslit
okay.
before.
And I'm guessing that's the appropriate past tense, or...
I would think
yeah,
so.
Yeah.
The gaslit.
Yeah, right? Gaslit. That's what I'm
I
saying.
I mean, maybe we're making up a word.
Hey, hashtag gaslit. Hashtag makeup words.
Hashtag those makeup words. So I have never been gaslit, but I can tell you straight up I've been ghosted.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Are you paying attention, Rachel? You've never called me back.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I was a dork in high school.
Okay.
So ghosting happened quite often.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
you know, they'd be like, yeah, I'll give you a call, blah, 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 blah.
Uh-huh.
And the thing about it is you only had the home phone back then.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, you know, you'd be waiting by the home phone.
Uh-huh.
Right? And then, like, the one time you'd go to the bathroom, the phone would ring.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And you'd be like, oh, that could have been them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the miracle of caller ID came.
Yeah.
Remember, it was that little box.
It was the little box.
Connected with your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would be like...
Who called me?
I'd be like, who called? You go back, like, six. You'd be like, oh, gosh, telemarketers.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
So, yeah. Yeah, I've been ghosted. Yes, absolutely. How about you? Have you been ghosted or gaslit?
Gaslit, yes.
Oh.
But ghosted, no. And, yeah. like, also, there's talking, like, some of the stuff that I was looking at, like,
yeah.
how does it feel to be ghostlit, and how does it feel to do the ghosting? Like,
yeah.
I said ghostlit.
You did. You just invented a
hashtag
word.
Hashtag ghostlit.
Yeah. What?
Two at once. Okay. But, yeah, like,
both at the same time.
Both at the same time. That would be a
disappearing
little...
and making you question your reality.
Exactly.
Like, did I exist ever?
Oh, wow. We're getting into some
Boom.
Serious territory
ghostlit.
Here.
Anyway.
Ghostlit could also be like Goosebumps, R.L. Stein.
Oh,
know?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah,
ghostlit.
Yeah, yeah.
But no, yeah, like having someone be like, you're crazy, this isn't how this works, why mm-hmm. are you doing this, you're crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I... And yeah, you question yourself for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's what's so interesting about gaslighting because like, the whole idea of questioning...
Your reality,
mm-hmm. the effect that individual who's doing that it has on you, that's pretty stunning.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. That's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty. And I think that like that's why this issue is for people sometimes who are hard like they find it hard to believe that someone's going through domestic violence
yeah.
because it's apparent that there are people who are going through domestic violence who don't even believe it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And
yeah.
so, like, yeah, it's really stunning to me.
Well, especially when, like, you can say something to somebody and
mm-hmm.
and it's a small thing, but then it can grow
yeah.
into a bigger kind of an abusive
mm-hmm.
service or, like,
mm-hmm.
an abusive situation.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't recognize it and it starts out small,
yeah,
like, everything starts out small.
Right.
You know? Then... over time, you're just like, what has happened?
Yep.
Looking
yeah.
back after it's all happened,
right.
you can
right.
see it clearly.
That's so much so, yeah, it's always the way it is too,
yeah.
right?
Yeah,
yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
Really good point. So we're not gonna keep you people any longer listening
no.
to our rantings and ramblings. We're going to take you straight in to the interview with Sarah Lloyd and April Spaulding from Safe Place. Here it is. Amazing interview. So we are here with Executive Director Sarah Lloyd and Program Director April Spaulding for Safe Place, which, full disclosure for people listening to the podcast, is one of the more popular safety charities in the program. You guys, like I said, are fourth or fifth in the entire program in specified donations. So thank you guys for coming.
We're kind of a big deal. So.
Exactly. Thank you guys for coming. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. So Safe Place is a thing that I think a lot of people are pretty aware of. They know the yellow sign that used to, I mean, when I was in school, that was always a big thing, was the yellow sign. Can you talk a little bit about the history of Safe Place as it relates to the community?
Sure. So in 1981, it started as a response to a community need that was seen. And it started as a collective effort, which means that there's not necessarily a leadership team driving what goes. It really is just a group of people who are all equivalent, a really flat organizational structure to move forward the mission of supporting individuals who are experiencing sexual and domestic violence. Mm-hmm. As time progressed, it was really clear as we achieved federal funding and different private donations and things mm-hmm. like that, there were an increased need of accountability and structure, and
right.
we started to kind of outgrow the collective model.
Yeah.
And so recently, within the last 15 years,
yeah.
We really moved into a structure of having a leader who is driving the direct service staff. Mm-hmm. And so today, we have 37 paid staff members. Inside of that, it's more of a hierarchical structure, and the culture of our organization is still very open and communicative,
yeah.
and structures for people to let us know if we're missing the mark and things like mm-hmm. that, which I think is unique in this environment. And then we also have another whole group of people, 48 strong, of volunteers that help us do what we're doing.
Wow. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
So what does your organization do for the community?
Well, we have four 24-hour services currently. So one of those is our helpline. So we have a 24-hour helpline people can call and talk to an advocate. And so that is something that we provide year-round, every day, every hour of the day. And when people call that line, they can get resources. Sometimes somebody just needs somebody to listen and hear them. People can also call and ask, how do I support my friend who's going through this? Uh-huh. Or I think that a family member might be experiencing domestic violence. Uh-huh. What can I do to help them?
Yeah.
So we get a lot of those calls as well. We have a 24-hour in-person sexual assault response to St. Pete's. Mm-hmm. They call us anytime that somebody comes into the hospital for a sexual assault exam, and we have 20 minutes to respond.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
So we send an advocate there. Any hour, day or night,
yeah.
and they meet with that person, and it's completely up to the survivor if they want us to stay.
Sure.
Oftentimes people want us to stay for support, or their family member that might be there might want us to stay to support them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do that as well. And while we're there, we provide some resources and let them know what to expect with the that whole medical process
mm-hmm.
and let them know what their rights are.
Right. Right.
We also do that response for incarcerated individuals as well.
Oh, wow.
So
cool.
It's called PREA, the Prison Rape Elimination Act, and we also will meet with incarcerated survivors and provide some resources and support.
Yeah.
So we have a 24-hour confidential location shelter that folks can stay in, and while they're there, there's always staff on site, and staff work really closely with people on their individual goals. So everyone coming to shelter has got unique goals and barriers as well. And our staff will work with them to do a lot of safety planning and help identify, you know, what are the next steps that this person wants to take and how do we help them get there?
Sure.
What resources are going to be most appropriate for somebody? It's going to be different person to person. So
yeah.
those are the kind of things mm-hmm. that we work on while folks are staying in shelter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of people know that we have 24-hour shelter, and so a lot of people know about Safe Place and think we're a shelter,
yeah.
but don't understand that the services we offer are so much more comprehensive.
Yeah.
And something that not a lot of people know is that at any one time, typically over half of the people in shelter are children.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And most often, they're children ages 8 and under.
Yeah.
So just thinking about that changes the dynamic of how people picture what shelter looks like,
sure.
what domestic violence looks like, and who's impacted by
right,
that.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So you mentioned advocates. And you mentioned that there were 37 people on staff. Are the advocates considered part of the staff?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and what does an advocate do?
An advocate, they do a lot of things. Yeah. They do a lot of safety planning. They do a lot of identifying barriers that people might have. Okay. So it's very difficult to leave an abusive relationship for a lot of reasons. So trying to figure out what are the unique things that are a challenge, and not only leaving but also starting over, or identifying if you're not ready to leave yet, what are things that we can do to try and help you stay as safe as possible in the meantime and find some other outside supports. So really advocates do a lot of resource sharing and trying to build up that support network so that we can work with folks wherever they're at in that process. So a lot of folks we work with might not be aware of what's available.
Sure.
And there's a lot of really great resources in our community available.
You guys work pretty closely with Address Confidentiality Program, correct?
Yes.
That's, that's one that's housed here at the Secretary of State's office.
It is, and that's another thing that our advocates are trained to do, is to help sign people up for the Address Confidentiality Program so that once they move on into a new place to live, they can have a confidential address.
Yeah.
Makes it much more difficult to find them.
Yeah.
And that's really important for a lot of our survivors who are escaping what sometimes is very long-term stalking.
And beyond the four 24-hour programs we have, we also have a lot of different community-based programs as well. We have outreach programs that reach young people, and so that they can start to learn what does a healthy relationship look like.
Yeah.
So it can be more preventative, right?
Yeah.
So that they don't find themselves, they're way less likely to find themselves in situations where they're in domestic violence.
Or like they could identify it before it gets to a point.
Right, like notice the signs.
Yeah.
Because sometimes what we see is that individuals don't recognize what's happening until it gets really bad, right?
Yeah.
And so just understanding way sooner. There are support groups that we run. We also do like training and community education. So we have a core training that anyone who's involved with Safe Place goes through. It's a 40-hour training.
Mm-hmm.
We also offer that to people in the community who may be based in advocacy work or interested in gaining those skills.
Mm-hmm.
We have that in English and in Spanish, which is pretty amazing. And then we also do legal advocacy, so really helping people who either want to go down the route of legal solutions to the issues that they're in, or gaining legal rights around like immigration or parenting plans and things like that. So really giving them free advocacy for legal. So it's important that people understand, yes, we have a shelter, and it's a really core service to what we do, and there are a lot of other ways that we really support individuals who have experienced violence, and that all of our services are super focused on being survivor focused.
Yes.
So if they don't want to go down the legal route, we don't make them go down the legal
route.
They get to choose what that looks like. And some entities don't have that choice. Like they have some obligations that they need to do.
Right.
But we always have been and always will be very survivor focused. So that they're escape from violence and they're building life after violence can look whatever, like whatever they'd like it to look like.
Nice.
In your experience, what are some of the factors that go into making a situation become violent? Is it like monetary, like social economic problems? Is it merely just psychological problems of the person who's doing it? What do you guys usually experience when you see this?
Well, that's, I mean, there's a lot of root causes when we're looking at domestic violence. A lot of those lie in our culture and what we see in the media. And domestic violence is something that can be carried out by somebody of any gender. And what we see is that a lot of the violence that people are facing is oftentimes coming from men. And so I think that a lot of the messages in the media around what does it look like to be a man, what is appropriate behavior, what does masculinity look like, but also what kind of messages in the media folks are getting about relationships and what's healthy. So, you know, we see a lot of messages through movies about jealousy meaning love, you know, or the persistent man who's after a woman until she finally gives in, and those are really negative messages that are ingrained at a really young age, and so You know, some of it's that. A lot of times, too, it's generational. People grew up in a household where they don't see anything other than domestic violence, and that to them is normal.
Even if they don't want to repeat the behavior necessarily.
Yes. So, you know, those are all factors. But also, you know, like you were saying, financial, that can kind of, that could be a factor for why people might stay in a situation for longer than they might want to be there. There's a lot of factors that keep people in a situation longer than that they would want to be. And part of it is also that psychological abuse that can really wear a person down till they don't feel like they have the energy to leave, or to the point where it's too scary to leave. Or having children in common and not knowing how am I going to provide for my children as a single parent when this person may have cut me off from all my family and friends and isolated me. So there's a lot of very intricate pieces of that.
Yeah, I love the cultural thing, because I think it is true. Like, when you, like if you think about, like, John Cusack from Say Anything holding up the boobacks, he's really actually creepy.
Yeah, he's kind of stalking her.
He's kind of stalking you. So, I mean, I think it is so interesting that, like, culturally you do have that. You see it, what is a man supposed to be and all that sort of stuff. It's really interesting to
me. Yeah, you're taught, like, this is a romantic gesture, but... Mm-hmm. It's
really not.
At that point in the movie, he's also called her like a gajillion times, and he's been at her house.
That's interesting.
And when we set that bar for how men need to show up, by default, we also show what does it look like, first of all, to assume heteronormativity, right? Mm-hmm. But then second of all, like, what does that mean for me as a woman as I show up in that space?
Yeah.
Because if the bar is already set that he needs to be aggressive, he needs to be assertive and all of that, then... As I stand as a partner in that, it means that I don't get the same access to being assertive or aggressive, right?
Right.
And so all of those things, I think, play into that. And at the core of all of those situations is really power and control.
Yeah.
And and part of the challenge of that is that for all of us, it looks different. Mm-hmm. When we get access to power, all of us want access to power in some way, right?
Yeah.
And when we get access to power, we show up differently. Mm-hmm. And so all of those different situations can look so different, which makes it more challenging as supporters of people going through violence. There aren't like these three signs to look for and you'll always see it.
Yeah.
A lot of times it looks very different.
Yeah.
There's not a profile for who goes through it. It can happen to rich people. It can happen to people who are in poverty. Mm-hmm. It can happen to people that you believe are strong, independent people. That was my story.
Yeah.
I was a person that was like, don't take any nonsense from anyone. And then I would go home and deal with domestic violence in my home. Right? And so there isn't a profile for that because it can show up.
Interesting. I also would you say demographically that the folks you see more of are female than male, or would you say it spans across the spectrum?
It spans across the spectrum, and we work with folks of all genders. So we see people who are in abusive relationships that are queer relationships.
Yeah.
Heterosexual relationships with abusers that could be any gender.
Mm-hmm.
And with that being said, most of the folks that we do work with are leaving a male abuser or are living with or experiencing abuse from a male abuser.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back to the cultural thing. That's definitely something that I think is really not hit on very often, you know?
Yeah, like it's a standard for a male to be an abuser and a female to be the recipient. Like that's, I think, part of what we see in the media the most.
Right. And the assumption, I think, that romantic involvement is necessary as well.
Yeah.
Because domestic violence, by definition, is violence that's happening in the home.
Yeah.
And so it could be a relative against a child. It can be...
Yeah,
you know,
true.
So just
it could be a
about,
roommate at
can,
that point, too.
Exactly, a roommate. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different dynamics that come to play. And the more... distance there is between a heterosexual male abuser, female victim and or survivor, the harder it is for people to really like seek resources and be believed in that because the dynamic isn't familiar for
them.
That's
interesting.
That makes sense.
Let me ask you what could possibly be a somber question.
Sure.
And that is, do you see it getting worse or do you see it getting better?
I would say... you know, it probably happens in waves, but I think that what we have seen over this past year has been a huge increase in violence and a huge increase in sexual assault.
Wow.
And it's the highest that we've probably seen in quite a while.
Wow.
Yeah.
So,
And the level of violence that's happening is also more significant. So, Typically, in order to do screening process and things like that, there's certain markers that we need to be able to meet in order to, like, know that we're serving the most in need, right?
Sure.
And what we're seeing typically is the majority of individuals we see have survived at least one attempted murder, right?
Like, wow.
Or the calls that we're getting involve torture at some level. So it's this person's yelling at me and hurting my feelings, and which is still not okay, but we're seeing a significant level of violence happening in those situations as well.
Wow.
In ways that people are saying, you know, people who've been in this work for a long time are like, never have we seen it in the history of Safe Place at the level of this.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that was a somber question.
Yeah.
Shoot.
It's the reality. Yeah. And that's the thing is, I think the more that we talk about it, the more power that we can give the people who are supporting and the people who are going through it. Because like I said, it's everywhere. And so a lot of people who are going through it, people would have no idea.
Yeah.
And the less we talk about it, the harder it is to break that stigma and break free from that.
Because, totally. It is reality as we see it right now. So, we definitely need to talk about it.
So let's take a break and talk a little bit about Friday Flicks. Looking for fun and inspiring ways to connect with different charities in our program? The CFD has got you covered. Every Friday during the annual giving campaign, the Combined Fund Drive will release a special video highlighting one of our member charities and what they do for the community. The videos are filled with amazing stories of inspiring people who are helping those in need every day. Check out each video for special content and different ways to give. For all our videos, visit www.cfd.wa.gov/cfd/videos. And back to the show.
What's the most important resource for a person to escape a domestic violence situation?
That really depends on the situation. Like we had talked about, all these, everybody's situation's different.
Sure.
What I have seen as being a very important resource is having a support network of people in your life that believe you and that support you. That, I think, is one of the most important resources, because so many survivors are isolated from their families and friends. And not having that kind of support makes it incredibly difficult to leave and to feel empowered to leave and feel like there's people that you can count on that are going to be there to support you and believe you. There's a lot of stigma and shame that can come with telling people in your life that you're experiencing abuse. And so really having people that will show up for you
and really believe
and really believe you and support you, but not be pushy about what you need to do. That is a huge need.
Have you noticed that most people, when they go down this road where they enter into a relationship that has some domestic violence to it, are they not believed at the very beginning? Is it hard for people to grasp that this situation could be happening?
Well, I think part of the challenge is that a lot of times in domestic violence you'll see gaslighting. And so what happens is the abuser will convince the person that they're abusing that it's not real. Uh-huh. And so that's one of the hugest barriers
crazy.
Is sitting in space where you're like, is this me? Like, maybe he's not being that mean, like, right? And so part of it is, like, how do they get in space where their truth is believed by them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a lot of times abusers are great at working systems and working cycles, and so that not many people will believe that behavior about them as people because of what they're presenting.
On the face of it.
And so, like, I've been in that experience before where I'm saying, okay, this is what's happened, and people are like, no, that person does not seem capable of that, right?
Sure.
And so even though they want to be supportive, and why would I make that up and why would I lie, at the same time they can't grasp that individual as a person being participating in that behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And so that makes it super challenging, first getting over the self-belief and then moving into people who can get over their image of who that person is in public, social media, all of that. So it's really hard to match those two things together for some people.
I think, too, when you see something happen, whether it's like a domestic violence situation, a murder, any kind of like violence, really, there are a lot of people who say, oh, so-and-so did that? They couldn't hurt a fly.
Right.
So I think that's something, too, where people just accept, like, this is a good person. How could they?
Right. You just saw it in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The family is absolutely stunned that this individual could do anything like that.
Yeah.
They would not believe the signs, even though almost in every single one of those mass shootings you see,
there are signs.
As it unfolds,
there
are all these signs that people chose to ignore along the way.
And domestic violence is a big common denominator in a lot of those cases as well.
Yeah.
And I think the ability to believe what's happening also draws into the conversation different dynamics around demographics, race, gender, and things like that. Mm-hmm. Because in our community, for instance, in the last few months, we've had 3 individuals die from domestic violence. Wow. Incidents, and there's different emphasis put on different events based on who is involved in that, what those demographics look like, what the history looks like, and so I think it brings into call another conversation around, like, how do we normalize the events of it regardless of who could be the offender, instead of making certain demographics more likely to do it, and so when it happens, it's like, see, that's why, instead of saying, like, all violence is not okay, and all violence needs to end.
So you mentioned social media.
Yeah.
We bring up, I feel like we bring up social media almost every single podcast we do.
It's a part of our
It's real. Yeah.
So do you think the rise of social media has made it easier for people leaving a domestic violence situation, or has it complicated, or both?
I think both.
Yeah.
I think on the easier side, there's more access to information, which I think is the gift of social media. Yes. And so you're more likely to understand the signs, see a meme, see an article, see someone's experience who's willing to share, like, this is what it looked like for me, and it's not okay. And so for me, in the privacy of my own home, I can look at that and say, oh, okay, like, what I'm going through is not okay. Maybe I can do something about it. So I think it can shorten the life cycle of the abuse that happens. Mm-hmm. On the other side, because everyone is so accessible, I think it makes it much harder to both speak your truth in ways that people believe, like we talked about already, and then to also leave safely.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, especially if you are in a marriage situation or a long-standing partnership situation, especially with family, and then if children are involved, right, there are ties that have to remain or mutual friends that exist.
Sure.
And so even in just a standard breakup, right, you have those people who stay on your social media to report back to the other person, like, what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
So then that heightens when you get into violent situations. Mm-hmm. So it's much harder to stay private and stay hidden when you're trying to hide with social media as a factor.
What do you guys do? How do you use your social media, your Facebook and Instagram and Twitter? How do you guys use it to try and connect with people and get people to kind of get out of the situations that they're in?
Well, our primary goal with social media is not necessarily we're trying to get people to leave. It's definitely we're going to meet people where they're at and support them wherever they are. A lot of what we do with our social media is letting folks know events that we're doing, some awareness of things that are happening in the community and our stance on those things, letting folks know about workshops that we have coming up. So it really is a way to kind of share what we're doing as an organization in the community to bring awareness that way.
Have you had folks come to your shelter or seek support from you guys as a result of things that you put on social media?
That's a good question. Yeah. And, you know, that would be a great question for us to ask folks when they come in that we've been recently discussing. We should be asking people, how did you hear about us? To try and figure out the best way to connect.
Yeah, because it's interesting, right? Because while that medium has a profound ability to make people fake and make people cyber bullies, and it has this very dark side to it, it also has this side where you see things where people can connect and do really great things as well. You know what I mean?
And we do have people message us on Safe Place occasionally asking for a callback or for resources. So that is one way that folks have connected with us is through private messages on our Facebook.
Yeah, awesome.
So, obviously, it is up to an abuser to end their behavior, right? You have to put that on the person. But what kind of steps can we take in Washington State to help end domestic violence?
I think reaching out to people when they're young is crucial.
Yeah.
The messages that children are taught.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's really important. Our SPEAK program does some really amazing work. That's our youth group that meets and talks about a wide range of topics relating to domestic violence, and then they go back into their schools as an advocate in their own school to be able to share that information with their peers. I'm not sure what our numbers are at this year, but I know last year in 14 middle school and high schools, we reached over 2,700 students with our outreach. Presentations and workshops around healthy relationships. So really prevention work, I believe, is a crucial step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think community education as well is important. And to move away from, I think, social media is a part of it, but also, like, we have attention spans that are super short. Mm-hmm. We can get instant gratification. We have to have the newest and the best, like the iPhone and all that kind of stuff, right? And so part of that is I think we've gotten to a point where societally we boil down things and say, like, tell us the top five things, the top seven things, the top three things, right? And so to move in this situation away from, like, what are the signs to look for, and mm-hmm. instead, how do we better respond to people who are saying they're struggling? Mm-hmm. I think in all issues would be helpful, but especially in domestic violence, because when I come forward, if I know my community will respond in trauma-informed ways that are supportive, I'm more likely to respond. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if I say to you, hey, this is what's happening to me in my life right now, and you're like, that's weird, because it doesn't go along with the five signs of domestic violence, mm-hmm. it's harder and harder for me to continue to come forward if every time I come forward, it's like, that's not real.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
And so I think building community efforts to respond to, like, what does trauma-informed community look like, mm-hmm. and what would it look like for us to just trust and believe and respond accordingly, then I think it would create a community in which we feel safe disclosing that information sooner before it gets so far down the line.
Yeah, it's interesting. So one of the I'm Catholic, and we go to Catholic Church, and we grew up in an era where the church had a real significant problem, obviously. And one of the things we've noticed over the changing years, because the churches had to deal with it themselves, is the idea that don't not believe the kid.
Right.
Believe the kid first,
right?
And act as if it probably is or could be true.
Right.
And if you can do that, then you're already better than you were, you know, 20 years ago when these things were happening. So I think that's really true.
Yeah, because a lot of responses are what I would call microaggressions. But, you know, you saying you're experiencing violence and I'm being like, well, they probably don't mean it that way. That's probably not the intention.
Yeah.
And then also creating context in which certain kinds of domestic and sexual violence are okay.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, in our country, in 2003, the last state made marital rape illegal. In 2003.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
And so, meaning that in states in our country, it was okay. Like, women would come forward and say, my husband has raped me. And they would be like, well, that's your husband, so that can't be rape.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In 2003, right?
Wow.
And so, part of it is, like, how do we look at our policies and, mm-hmm. and laws and things like that, and understanding that that can't be the only answer, because some survivors don't want to go the legal route, right?
Yeah.
But, like, how do we continue to make our community trauma-informed and responsive so that it's safe for me as a survivor to show up and tell my story and tell my truth and seek resources, regardless of which route I go
mm-hmm.
into.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So, April, you mentioned the SPEAK program.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming that is for Thurston County Schools.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm. Is it something that goes through, like, elementary school, middle school, high school, or what kind of schools?
It's a high school. It's a group of high school students, and they meet at Safe Place.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are from local high schools around mm-hmm. Thurston County, and they get together and have discussions on topics that they get to pick at the beginning of the group
mm-hmm.
Nice. That relate to violence in our communities, domestic violence, sexual assault, consent, healthy relationships.
Sure.
And then they do a year-long series of workshops, or maybe it's an eight-month series of workshops that they do. And then, like I said, they can go back and really be like an ambassador in their school and among their peers. And that's really where we have the most influence. Youth and adults, we have the most influence among our group of peers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a great place, too, to be doing a lot of that awareness and kind of educating people in our peer groups when we hear them saying something that might be problematic or something that might be a myth about domestic violence. That's our chance to speak up and say, oh, actually, have you thought about it this way before or considered this?
Yeah.
So I'm assuming, too, that you guys have resources that are definitely restricted more to Thurston County because you're not like a chain of safe places all across the state. But and you probably have connections with shelters and programs that help domestic violence victims and abusers, or sorry, victims and survivors. But have you seen anything where another program has programs that are like the SPEAK program throughout the state?
There are other state programs that do a lot of workshops in the schools. I'm not sure if they have something like SPEAK, so I couldn't really speak to that.
Yeah.
But I do know that there's some really great outreach work being done in schools statewide.
Nice. Cool. Very cool.
So someone hears the podcast and they want to start giving to you.
It's a great idea.
Yeah, they probably should.
I'd recommend it.
So can you guys talk about a little bit about what those type of donations do for you guys?
Sure. There's a lot of things. Part of our philosophy around helping survivors is really working them towards long-term sustainability for themselves and their families. And so part of how you get to that place is meeting emergent needs first, right? Like, we've all been in a meeting and been hungry, and you're not listening at all because you're like, I just want to eat. Right?
Yeah.
Same thing. So if we meet emergent needs, then you can start developing long-term skill building and things like that. And so we have an opportunity with client assistance funding that we can provide those basic needs. So toiletries, food, gas cards to get from here to there, gift cards, because part of what helps people be most successful in survivor work is giving the power of choice. Because a lot of times in their environments, they have not had the ability to choose anything. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so though it's overwhelming to build that muscle, it's important. So it's one thing to give someone a bag of groceries and be like, this is what I chose, you need it, right? And it's another thing to say, here's $50 for Safeway, get what you believe you need, right? Yeah. And those are those small little decisions are what build into longer term decisions of like, what school district do I want to live in for my children? Sure. Like, what would I like to tell people? Where do I want to end up in the country? Like, things like that. So it allows us to meet those emergent needs. And it helps us continue to run our shelter. I mean, it takes food. It takes washcloths. It takes towels. All of those kinds of things to really help our individuals be as successful as they need. And because every situation is different, their needs are different, right? So the funds help us meet those emergent needs.
Awesome.
Which is crucial.
Awesome.
Yeah. And then we also, I mean, we've had really great community support for a long time. We've been a resource in this community, and we can see that through the way that we get our funding. So roughly just over 50% of our funding is federal funding, and then the other roughly 50% is from private donations, from you know, community benefits, from individual giving, from people who do monthly giving. And that is huge. I mean, that the community support is so important.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And did you have any upcoming events or anything that you're going to be doing in the future to, like, highlight?
We have a gala every year. We just had one last month.
Nice. Oh, December. Right now.
And that is a way that we do bring in a lot of money for our programs and for our clients. And the gala is our one huge event that we do every year, every September.
Right on.
Awesome. Well, Sarah, April, I really appreciate you guys coming. This was an awesome conversation. We really enjoyed having you guys and learning more about Safe Place and then domestic violence overall. So we really appreciate you guys coming.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So that was the interview with Executive Director Sarah Lloyd and Program Director April Spaulding at Safe Place. I thought it was, honestly, you're not supposed to have favorite interviews. It was one of my favorite interviews.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, this is one of those that's it's a profoundly sensitive subject for me because bullying's a huge deal.
Yeah.
You know, in my opinion, and I think it gets overlooked a lot.
Yeah.
And I think that we have this mentality sometimes in this particular society at this moment that we're having these two dichotomies happen.
Yeah.
We have this group of people who are like, you need to recognize the victims, we need to change these sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
And you have these opposing people who don't like abuse, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that they understand maybe that like the sort of profound effects it has on people.
Yeah.
If people can't shake abuse.
Yeah.
It doesn't take like a day to get over.
No, yeah. And you can't just say, suck it up, get over it.
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly.
Yeah. And that idea, like the be a man kind of a thing. Like, no.
Huge deal. Stop. I thought that was really interesting. The cultural stuff. Yeah. I thought that was really great conversation, because I do believe that that's a thing, and I believe that spans multiple ethnicities.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That is not a race thing at all. It is this image that we still have of like
what a man is supposed to be. I'm supposed to be respected and blah, 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 mm-hmm. blah, blah. And we're supposed to live up to these lofty ideas we see in our culture about what a guy is supposed to actually be.
Well, yeah, and it's kind of a crazy thing now as adults to say, okay, let's watch this movie that I saw when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. I loved this movie. It was amazing. Yes. And then to go back and be like, wow, what? He's kind of creepy. Kind of a creep. Yeah, he's or kind of a creep. Or like, that's not cool to do to people.
Looking back at John Cusack's entire romantic comedy career, he's a creep.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I mean,
you can still come on the podcast, John.
Yeah, love you. High school boyfriend. Hashtag high school boyfriend.
Hashtag high school boyfriend.
But yeah, like we've talked multiple times about High Fidelity, top five, right?
Yes.
Slightly
he might manic, be a you know? Little bit of a bipolar manic depressive person in that movie.
Yeah,
boy, that makes that movie more depressing now.
You're welcome.
Damn it.
But yeah, I mean, yeah. We grow up with music, with movies, with mm-hmm. TV shows, with magazines and books where this is just how people behave. We get used to it and we mm-hmm. think that's how we should also behave.
Yeah.
And until something happens where it's like, wait, I'm questioning right. how this goes. Like, it's just how we do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so not to get too, because it's so on our brains right now with the horrible shooting that happened in Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The conversation always goes to whether or not we should have restrictions on guns. That's the first thing that comes out of everybody's sure. mouth, yeah. right? And one side fights ardently for it, and the one side fights ardently against it.
Yeah.
And then everybody usually lives in the middle, yeah. where we think to ourselves, well, we probably should have some smart things going on.
Sure.
Right? But one of the things that does happen, I think, unfortunately, in that dialogue, mm-hmm. is that we continue every single time one of these things happen to look back. First, we're always stunned.
Yeah.
Right? It's a jarring experience.
Oh, yeah.
It's an elimination of social norms.
Yeah.
Right? People aren't supposed to go shoot other people. People aren't supposed to hit other people. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not supposed to be able to walk around and have something like that happen to you.
Yeah.
When it happens, it's always jarring. But we're always sort of surprised, and the families are always sort of surprised that this individual would do this
yeah.
until you begin to look back, and their whole past is littered with these signs, these yeah. flags that if just one person would have believed it maybe once.
Yeah.
And they could have reported it, then you could have, if not helped fix this one individual, who may have gone down that road anyway,
mm-hmm.
At least you could have removed them from
yeah.
from doing something like that.
I think that's a culture thing too, though, because like, if somebody in your family who commits an atrocity,
mm-hmm.
okay, or if it's just domestic violence at home, or if it's some kind of big shooting, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of what it is. There are going to be those signs where they said something to you
mm-hmm.
that was like a red flag, but you put it out of your mind because, no, that's yeah. that's not, no, yep. that, I don't believe that, or that's just weird. Maybe they were having an off day or yep. something. If you talked to somebody else who you mutually know
mm-hmm.
and realized that they've had something completely different, that in an interaction with that person, that was also a red flag,
mm-hmm.
now you've got two red flags.
Yep.
But putting it together and being like, so what do we do about that?
Yeah.
Nobody does that.
I know. And I think they made the really good point of like, first of all, you do have the victim
yeah.
who through circumstances either being convinced by the individual that's doing the abuse or themselves
yeah.
That they can't leave or uh-huh. that it's not as bad as they think it
yeah,
is
it's
and
not
that
as
sort
bad
of stuff.
As it is, yeah.
That I don't know that even if you had third parties see red flags and all those sort of mm-hmm. things, if there was anything they could do until that individual
acted.
Like made the brave decision to like cut it off and get away. Because
mm-hmm.
That's the other thing too is you can have, and that is what's tough about this whole conversation about mass shootings and about domestic violence in general, is that you can have all the signs in the world, but you know at the end of the day, it's tough to stop people from making their own individual decisions because you can't babysit them 24 hours a day.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And this person needs to be convinced themselves.
Yeah.
Essentially, to have the guts to stand up and to leave and to, like, figure things out on their own. Yeah. That's what I love about Safe Place, though. I mean, when they were talking about where they provide the gift cards and they provide all
yeah.
these things for a person who feels totally powerless.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
Yeah, because it does give back power.
Yeah.
Yeah. It yeah. makes somebody, like, if you, like Sarah was saying, if you pick out a bag of groceries and give it to somebody, here, I've decided you need uh-huh. this. okay, great, thank you, that's very nice. Mm-hmm. But giving somebody the power to go out and decide what they need for themselves,
yeah,
that when somebody's powerless is a big, big step.
Very cool. Pretty cool. Like, it's definitely an organization that is reading their people really well.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was an amazing, amazing conversation with those guys. You know, really, really just fabulous. Talk a little bit about some of the upcoming events. So October has, really, it's funny because October has like three super, like, could be on their own months. I don't know why they shoved them all into October.
Maybe all the other months were taken.
I guess. But it's National Domestic Violence Month, which in and of itself is pretty amazing. It's Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
I think that's the one everybody knows.
Everybody knows that.
Yeah. But, like, National Domestic Violence Month, not everybody knows
that. And they should.
Yeah.
It's a big deal. Yeah. It's a big deal. Yeah, and the Breast Cancer Awareness Month with the pink, and the NFL is going to be wearing all the pink now and all that sort of stuff. And then National Disability Employment Awareness Month. Man, that by itself should be its own category.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So those are the three. Those are the three that things this month. If you're a donor through the CFD, go to the website and maybe find a charity that fits into one of those categories.
Yeah.
If you're into trying to help solve those particular issues. We just finished the first week to give last week. We do not have any numbers on it yet, but we've had, of course, high levels of activity.
It's a crazy week, that is for sure. Oh, man.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the things we did that was sort of impromptu is we did a thing this year where we basically offered up a dozen donuts for $12.
Yeah.
For anybody, and we made the guarantee that the CFD would hand deliver those donuts.
Yeah, we
you.
Did.
I did not anticipate the amount of people who personally want Philip Kerrigan to drop off donuts for them.
Well, I mean, you're also, I think, leaving out the fact that people love donuts.
Well, obviously.
Like, that's, like, come on.
I mean, yes, obviously. Yes, people love donuts.
Yeah.
Here's what I think is funny. We have all these wellness things.
Yeah.
Right? And that's great.
Yeah.
We need the wellness stuff.
We do.
But it's always funny to see people like, but I still want 12 donuts.
Yeah. And I want them, please, now, hand-delivered.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we also did sort of impromptu, but there was a plan to it. For the first week to give, we sat outside the Capitol building on Tuesday and Friday
and froze
of last
our
week.
Behinds on.
We did. It was in good faith and good cause.
Yes, we did. It was fun.
But yeah, I mean, what better to accompany a $5 coffee gift card than giving coffee out to anybody who walks by?
Yeah. So it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun. It was super cold.
It was. It was surprising. I didn't expect it to be that cold that first day on Tuesday.
Yeah. Gloves and parkas were worn on Friday.
Yeah, because, sure. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty cold. But it was pretty fun. I thought that was
have a good time.
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so then some of the things that are coming up. So honestly, we're in the mode now where the CFD State Office is being invited to more of the agency fundraising.
Dude, events. It's so fun.
They're so much fun.
Yeah.
People have such high energy.
Yeah.
We love all you guys that put together events. They're just so much fun.
Yeah.
Invite us to everything. We will go.
That's true.
But the big one that's still left for the CFD, and it's huge, is the Masquerade Ball that's happening on October 21st. At the Capitol Building, most of the funds will go to support the Combined Fund Drive. We do have a couple of little things in there that kind of help benefit charities, but it's amazing. It's got a casino night. It's got food. One of the cooler things we're doing this year is, number one, we're doing a scavenger hunt.
Yep.
Kind of going around the Capitol. The second thing is, last year for folks who went, you got to pick best taste and best presentation.
Yeah.
This year you actually get to pick best charity presentation.
As well as
and
for
the charity
food,
wins,
yeah.
That charity wins $100.
That's super rad.
That's pretty cool.
And, you know, that's one of those things. Give the power to the people. Let the people decide.
That's right.
I
Give
like
the
that.
People what they want.
That's right.
So that those are basically it for what's happening right now. We'll have obviously way more podcasts for you as we do it. But this was a great podcast, awesome conversation with some people.
I love that you loved it.
I thought it was great. Thank
That's
you.
That's good.
I love that you loved it. I loved it.
Oh, so much love. Hashtag so much love.
Ah. All right, people, on that note, we're gonna let you go. Hashtag goodbye.
yes, hashtag goodbye.